answer throughout the conversation, but how do you work with communities to craft a collective and democratic vision?
Okay, so I could actually do that for tobacco, but let's switch to one because I'm going to be talking tonight. Let's switch to the Clinch River Valley Initiative. And let me say, so I'm saying, I think the operative word is help. So this is them doing it themselves. And so we have the privilege of being able to be at a public university where service is part of our mission and being able to help people work with that. So with the Clinch River Valley Initiative, and which I'll be talking about in much greater detail tonight, that, just for people that are listening and didn't get a chance to go to the talk, is a project now that is not owned by anybody. It's not a nonprofit by itself, and there's no one body that says, well, we are the ones that are running it. My institute, the Institute for Environmental Negotiation, typically facilitates most of the meetings for it, and we have some grants that allow us to write the meeting summaries. We operate a website for people, but there's lots of activity that occurs outside of the work that we do as well. But that's an example where there were people in Southwest Virginia, far Southwest Virginia, who felt as though they needed to have a forum that would bring people together to focus on, can we take our enormous assets, our cultural assets, our historical assets, but also our environmental assets in particular in this case, the Clinch River in particular, which is a world-class asset for biodiversity. And can we actually have a conversation that doesn't involve, you know, just the environment or just economics, but actually says, can we both grow our economy and protect our environment, enhance our environment, and keep our image of who we are as a community together ourselves? So that project has had probably have 150 people or so, maybe even more, that have actually attended meetings in that, and anywhere from 40 to maybe 65 people at a time that will come to meetings, and then it's evolved into five different work groups that are working. And that began really with just an initial meeting of some diverse group of people saying, what's important to you? What would you like to see happen? And eventually, I think about our fourth meeting, somebody said, you know, we should have a vision. We really should have a vision that's going to guide us for that. And so it was actually the vision came after people had said, there's a problem. We've got a change in our economy. You know, coal is not as important as it used to be. It's going to continue to decline somewhat. We need to find ways to improve our economy, to retain our youth, to be able to provide for public services like education and health, and do so in that we don't sort of destroy our character. And they would use the term, so it's not me, and if you like Dollywood, don't tell me, but, you know, they would say, we don't want to be Dollywood, we want to have the real thing. You know, we have the real Appalachian heritage here. So after people discussing that over some period of time and seeing that they actually had some common ground, environmentalists, economic development people, people from the universities, people from local government, state agencies, people from the business community saying, let's create a vision. And so it was after about a year of meetings that we actually did an exercise where people identified, what have we really been talking about and what's important to that? And unfortunately, I don't have that vision memorized, but it basically has to do with the Clinch River Valley will be a world-class attraction because we've been able to protect the natural environment, because we've been able to protect our cultural and natural resources, but we've also been able to protect our people here, to provide jobs for people, and do so in a way that is a model for other people. So that's it's a long-winded answer, but actually much shorter than what it really took. It took a lot of work to get to that point.
Yeah, it seems like it usually does.
How did you get the different groups to come together at the beginning?
So for the Clinch River Valley Initiative, yeah. So the different groups to come together. Well, we run a leadership institute, which is a partnership program founded by Mike Ellerbrock of Virginia Tech. So all credit to Mike and Virginia Tech. And we have partners at other state agencies. But we take people around the state. And every year we've been taking people to far southwestern Virginia and looking at coal mining issues and actually taking people to a coal mine. And hearing people saying, you know, we're There's fights over, you know, coal mining and surface mining and mountaintop mining and so forth, but there's also pretty much agreement that the people just look at the numbers. They know there aren't nearly as many people employed in coal as there used to be. You know, coal is a finite resource. Even though we continue to be creative in finding ways to mine it, we know that we're going to be getting less coal, at least at some point in the future, and the future is not terribly far away. And there are concerns on the impact on the environment and health for people as well. So we would hear that when we would come down every year. And so about 3 years ago, we actually decided, well, let's put together a panel, not just hear from people individually, let's put together a panel to talk about that. And we had people from, just people from Dominion, people from Southern Appalachian Mountain Stewards, which is fighting mountaintop removal, people from Appalachian Voices, which is an environmental group really active in also against mountaintop removal and water quality. And we had people from economic development and state government as well in a panel for this Leadership Institute, and asking them not to debate each other, but actually to say, why is this issue important to you? What does it really mean to you? And they ended up having a really good conversation with each other. Despite their fears, there was actually quite a bit of nervousness. Are we being set up? You know, what's going to happen? Who are these people that we're going to be talking in front of? Because people just don't have a way. They don't talk like that. And actually, at lunch afterwards, one of the participants said, we should be talking like this every month. We should be getting together because we actually have a lot of common ground, you know. And they agreed. Everybody agreed. And so we said, well, what can we do to help? So we didn't meet next month, and we didn't meet the next year, but we did meet. It took us about 14, 15 months. And what we did was have lots of telephone conversations, and we came back and visited a couple more times in person with people and just asked people, so if you were interested in pulling people together to look at the region's economy, and knowing, of course, there are people that are doing this, there are economic development people, but doing this in a way that actually starts to engage people that haven't been part of that conversation, so the environmental advocacy community or ordinary citizens, you know, how would you do that, and who would you involve with that? And so after doing that, we felt as though we'd heard enough to say, let's bring people together, share what we've learned, and see what people may want to do to move forward with that. And we've done this in a number of other circumstances too. So we had a meeting September 28th, 2010 at UVA Wise, so in Wise, right in the middle of the coal country. And we had about 65 people come who were either intrigued enough or worried enough that something was going to happen that, you know, maybe they wanted to stop, you know, that they better pay attention to. And asking, and we had some presentations from them. So we brought them, they came together. We had some presentations, and then we had an open discussion. What do people think they need to have happen? And does it make sense? Would they be interested in us? What we do is help people solve problems together. We bring people together. We facilitate them. And they said, well, this is really good because we do a lot of collaboration, but we don't do it with as wide a group. So, you know, all the economic development people will get together, or all the educators will get together, and there's a lot of collaboration, or they get together with the legislators and they get agreement on legislative priorities, but they really hadn't done it with as diverse a group as that. And so after lots and lots of interviews and discussions and asking people what's important to them and what they like to see happen, that initial gathering was the result of that. And we were saying, we don't have an agenda that needs to occur. You know, we're interested in working with you if you think it's important, but we don't have to do that. Our work is not involved in pushing people towards a particular direction. Our work is involved with resolving conflict and developing consensus for communities to make decisions for themselves. So there is very good collaborative capacity in that region, and so people kind of took this idea and ran with it. We've been having basically, for the past 3 years, about every 3 months we'll have a large meeting, and then there are action groups, smaller action groups that have developed, and they meet much more frequently than that. And this group has decided, and this happened over a period of the next 2 meetings, about what was their priority. So they created a vision, but they also said, and the way we're going to do that is we're going to create a state park. We're going to revitalize our downtowns. We're going to create more access points to the river so that not only can citizens take advantage of it, but we can actually open it up for entrepreneurs to be, developing outdoor recreation businesses. And we are going to improve the water quality, not just maintain the water quality, but improve the water quality. And then tied to this is really developing a higher level of environmental education around the region. And what that's actually become is they'd like to have an environmental hub, but an environmental center, an ecological center, that actually would be more of a hub that people can come to, kind of like Heartwood is now. I don't know if you're familiar with Heartwood, but it's a beautiful, beautiful building that is a hub for arts and crafts activities in Southwest Virginia. And it's a gateway. Tourists come in and they see this and they can see the names of all the people and the location of their shops and they can go there. So they want to develop an education center the same way. And so our next meeting, October 16th, is open to anybody. We're going to be in Dungannon, and which is along the Clinch River. And we welcome people, if there are any listeners within the range that want to come to that, October 16th, starting at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not sure of the exact time. Actually, our steering committee will be meeting before that.
And what's the location?
Well, Dungannon, and it's, I'm not sure. I think
Dungannon?
I think there's a former train depot, which I think is owned by the Dungannon Development Commission. I'm pretty sure that's where we're meeting. But you can also go to the Curvy website. Curvy is Clinch River Valley Initiative, and it's clinchriverva.com. clinchriverva.com. And we have all the information about the work that the great work that these people have been doing on there. So we play a facilitative role in that. So our institute, I have a wonderful partner there, Christine Gauvais, who is a project lead on that, and she and I co-facilitate the meetings. And then we have a number of graduate students over the years that have worked with us, and this is a great experience for them to be able to get some hands-on experience. But it also is a good resource for the people in the community, the communities that are participating in this, so they don't have to be bothered by thinking about who's taking notes, how's the meeting going to be structured, who do we get to run the meeting. Now, there's a steering committee, you know, we don't just develop the agenda, we ask them what's important to talk about, but we basically are kind of providing the support services for them in doing that.
I noticed that you said that there isn't a nonprofit that's been formed around
Right. The main concern to not have that was they love the idea that no one group has ownership of it. And if it becomes some agency's project, you know, then it becomes that agency's project. And they're going to do that. So we'll see. I you know, they did say they would like to do it, but there's no time frame for that.
Do you have an opinion about that?
My opinion is that the group knows best. So I will say I'm free. So facilitator doesn't mean we just ignore what's going on, or we just say, all right, you've decided that. I raise questions with them. So what's the consequences of not incorporating? You know, is this going to be able to continue? If you do incorporate, are people going to drop off because there might not be leadership, because everybody right now sees that you have to step up to the plate? So our role is to make sure that they are thinking through those questions, which they have done in that. So my opinion is, yes, you need to, any decision you need to make should be a well-informed decision, and theirs is a well-informed decision.
Can you speak more to the university's role in conflict resolution?
Do you mean universities in general?
Yes, universities in general.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited about this. There's actually, there's a organization called the University Network for Collaborative Governance. Now, I'm not excited about that term, but collaborative governance is just a fancy way of saying for bringing people together to solve problems, okay? And the reason that there is that there are a number of universities that have doing similar work to what we're doing around the country and outside of the country as well. And enough of us that we've actually created this network, and we meet annually and have discussions about ways of being effective. I think universities, well, of course, Virginia Tech is an extension university, so public service, of course, is an enormous part of its mission, and everybody knows that. And people know, you know, there are smaller schools and private schools, too, where they will say that the service is part of their mission. I think particularly useful in situations of conflict or let's say of difference is the fact that universities have a certain legitimacy as not having something specifically at stake in the outcome of a specific issue, and that people tend to look at them for knowledge leadership, and that part of knowledge leadership is knowing how to help people solve problems. So I think we've benefited from that being at the University of Virginia. I think other people have benefited as well from being at a university. And I think it's also a responsibility that we have to help solve problems. I think also universities are wonderful places. You have a lot of people that have lots of talent. And so actually this idea of bringing people to a university, and I know this happens at Virginia Tech, it happens at the University of Virginia, other schools too, actually. I'm sure you have conferences and symposium, but there also will be times when actually you might be hosting a group that is having some difficult challenges, and they can have an effective conversation with each other that's informed by the knowledge that's in the room by people at a university. I would love to see universities as conveners, that actually more of that. There certainly are circumstances, but more of that, not taking over issues, but actually saying, we've heard, you know, that there's a question of poverty, you know, in this particular region, or that there's an issue that has to do with there's concerns with a certain type of educational system, you know, and we're willing to offer some of our support in exchange for the learning that can occur for our students, for our faculty. We think this would be a beneficial sort of exchange. What we can do is help you. We can host you. We can put you in contact with people that have considerable knowledge about these issues. And we can get you away from the sort of hubbub or for instance, at the state level, people, you know, in Richmond, you see people fighting the same problems over and over again. Let's get away from that. Let's get in a setting where you know that you're supposed to be thinking about problems in a different way. So I'm actually really big on universities being able to serve as sort of incubators of problem solving. And there is a network now, University Network for Collaborative Governance, that's actually helping schools learn how to do that better.
Thank you. Well, I have one more question. What do you see as the capacities in individuals, groups, and communities for creative and democratic dialogue and problem solving?
That's a great question. So, first of all, let me say I think there's a big need for that. Our democracy, every society, whether you're a democracy or not, needs to have everybody involved in that. I was at a luncheon today, and I remembered a quote by Missoula's former mayor, Dan Kemis, and he's also written about democracy and problem solving. And his was that Missoula is 1,000 times smarter than I'll ever be. And this idea that when you can bring people together in the right circumstances, in the wrong circumstances, people often are just, they come to meetings, there might be 1,000 people there, and you can have 2 minutes to say your piece, and you don't get anything done creatively, right? But if you can actually bring people together in the right circumstances, where people know they're going to be listened to, where they know that they can ask questions and get good answers, or if they don't have good answers, they can figure out how to get good answers together, where they know that there's not somebody working behind the scenes to, you know, manipulate the process or defeat them, then we put our creative hats on and create things that people couldn't have imagined before. And I've seen that happen over and over again. And I think our democracy needs to have that capacity. Every community needs to have that capacity to be able to make use of our talents. Certainly, you know, this region has, you know, with the university and the history and the business, you know, connections that they have, also the numbers of social service agencies, other nonprofits. This is a fertile ground for creativity, and if we can channel that, if you can channel that by figuring out how to actually channel that constructively into solving problems instead of into fighting each other over those issues, that will be, you know, it's something that we really need to do. And I don't want to leave you the impression that it doesn't mean fighting. it doesn't mean conflict. It actually means possibly more conflict in the sense of more understanding that there are diverse views and different views that people have, but not the sort of conflict that you associate with name-calling and slandering and people walking out of the room. I mean the conflict in the sense where people really do understand why they have these differences, and then you can, only then can you actually begin to figure out ways to transcend those differences.
Okay. And how do you promote these capacities?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. So we have something called the Virginia Natural Resources Leadership Institute. It's a partner organization. Mike Ellerbrock of Virginia Tech founded that, and we started that in order to bring this capacity to more and more communities. So we've had over 300 graduates of that program that have gone through the six-session, three-day sessions, nine-month-long program with, you know, work in between as well. And not because they're going to become mediators, because they're going to become principal leaders and conveners in their own communities, and they've done that over and over again. They've done far more work than my institute has ever been able to do. And we've seen people all over the state and outside of the state, because they've learned and gotten confidence in their ability to bring people together, that they've done some really amazing, daring, amazing, and productive work at reaching out to people that might have formerly been thought of as enemies and bringing them in to deal with differences. So that's our answer to that. And we also write and do some research and teach also in our program of urban and environmental planning, and do things like this, speak to other organizations as well as, you know, other universities as well. And I want to say, too, I do more work with Virginia Tech faculty than I do with UVA faculty, not because I don't want to work with UVA faculty, but because there are more Virginia Tech faculty that are actually out in communities around the state working on real-world problems, and they're interested in and knowledgeable and competent in this, in working together collaboratively.
Okay, thank you.
Frank Dukes, thanks very much for being a guest on Talk at the Table. It's been a great interview.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Well, that's it for this Sunday's program. Our guest was Frank Dukes from the University of Virginia Institute for Environmental Negotiation, and our interviewer, Anna Irwin, who is a graduate student and a member of the Community Voices team at the Virginia Tech Institute for Policy and Governance. And to you, our listeners, thanks for tuning in. Remember, when it's Sunday, tune in at 2:30 to 3:30 here on WUVT-FM Blacksburg, the Valley's number one radio station. So until next week, keep talking community.
Salvation, he ran by the hour, and love the old, rebirth of the new. strange divine. And those strings, you'll make it. Ooh, we'll love a lot insane. Battle cries and champagne, just in time for sunrise. Ooh, we'll love a lot insane. Motor sensation, mind. So maybe hell, I'm waiting, clutches of sad remains. Wait for a lad insane.
There's only one place on the dial you can hear. John Scofield, Greg Oz, Matthew Schitt, The Bad Plus, Ben Ellis, Quincy Jones, Dave Burrett, Lightcap, Paul Blair, Fred Hirschfeld, Ken Craig Tate, Amanda Monaco, Springfield Joe, Jack, Chicago Underground, Ray Bell, Desky, Dave Douglas, Hoggins and John McLaughlin, William Hooker, Coltrane, Galactic, Sonny Rollins, Gil Scott, Pharaoh Sex, Johnny Savrand, Stanley Ornette, Jimmy Smith, Horace Silver, Chick Corby, Cedar Wongetz. There's only one radio station that can bring you all that jazz. WUVT-FM, 90.7, Blacksburg, Radford, Christiansburg. The New River Valley is tuned to WUVT. Calm when we arrived at the party.
embracing the evening. My wife leaned over and she whispered, I love you. I held her close and we danced. We had the best time at your party.
everybody. Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Break the